From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in an airport where two men are embracing. One is an American veteran who served in Afghanistan. The other is an Afghani interpreter who served alongside him. That interpreter has just arrived in the United States to begin a new life after escaping the Taliban. The scene is one that happens in cities across America. But after long and arduous processes, full of red tape and bureaucracy, that's usually how it happens. It usually takes years. The interpreters arrive in the United States on SIVs, special immigrant visas. The scene is also one that was fictionalized in a new CBS sitcom called The United States of Al. The show tells the story of Al, that's short for his full name. He's an Afghan interpreter, and he's reunited with the American Marine named Riley, with whom he served in Afghanistan. Even before it aired, the show's premise came under fire. Some critics said that it was probably racist or a brown savior project. But the writer and executive producer Reza Aslan responded, quote, "As brown people in this country, we know better than most the sensitivity that a lot of people have about the way that Hollywood has represented them. The dream for us has always been to get a Muslim protagonist on network television, someone who could really reframe the perceptions of so many Americans about Muslims or people from this broad region," end quote. Local SIVs and veterans have watched the show. They join us this hour talking about the premise, the representation on television, and the SIV process that maybe, if this show sticks around, more Americans will learn about. Did the show characterize it fairly? Did it romanticize military life, as some critics have said? What do we misunderstand about the realities that veterans and interpreters face? We'll talk about it with our guests this hour. The executive director of Keeping Our Promise is Ellen Smith, and she's back with us. Ellen, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Evan, always great to be on your show, and thank you so much for bringing attention to this.
You got it. Jamil Haidari is a former interpreter for the U.S. military and arrived just recently in December. Jamil, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me on your show today. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. It's wonderful to have Samim Rahimi, who is a former Kabul embassy worker. Samim, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you for adding me. Thanks so much.
You got it. Chris Purdy is a program manager for Veterans for American Ideals. Chris, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
All right, thanks. It's great to be here.
And I want to make sure our listeners understand what these organizations are all about. Chris, tell us a little bit about Veterans for American Ideals.
Sure. So Veterans for American Ideals, we're a project of Human Rights First, a national advocacy organization. And we have about 6,000 veterans nationwide, and we focus on human rights issues ranging from our core issues of the SIV program to broader human rights work, both internationally and domestically. But we were started in 2015 to organize veterans specifically around saving our wartime allies in Iraq and Afghanistan.
And Ellen Smith, remind our listeners about Keeping Our Promise.
Keeping Our Promise works on visa advocacy and also helps to resettle these SIVs here in Rochester by providing their first month's rent and security, food, and getting them over, if need be, on emergency flights when their lives are at risk.
So you've been doing the SIV process for years now, Ellen. What was it like when you found out that CBS was going to do a sitcom with this at the center?
You know, I'm used to documentaries, and I'm used to listening to things on WXXI. So I had to wrap my head around a sitcom, and I couldn't imagine what would be funny about the process. And there are some humorous things that were in this show and other things that that need way more depth for anyone to understand what the process is about. And as I've said about the show, some of these things we have to laugh about because otherwise we would be crying.
Well, there's a lot of things I want to do this hour because I think this will be a chance for all of us to learn more about what this process is actually like. I know we've talked about it, Ellen, but now that it's in this national spotlight, it's a way to, I don't mean to nitpick, but I think it is important to know, if we see it on television, is it faithfully representative? And so you have Awalmir, who goes by Al, an Afghan interpreter who worked with a U.S. Marine named Riley, and on the show spent about 3 years working through this process, and the show picks up right at the start with him arriving at the airport. And at one point, the character says, you know, he would live in someone's garage. He was going to take the first bed that was offered. Ellen, when SIVs get to the United States, is the plan for to have, you know, them stay in something more than just a bed in a garage? What is the plan?
So the issue is that these SIVs can leave as soon as they get their visas. And we're welcoming someone to Buffalo tomorrow who left Kandahar yesterday morning, and then the Taliban bombed the airfield.
Oh.
So we were able to contact our partners at Miles for Migrants and get an emergency flight for him here, and we're going to pick him up in Buffalo tomorrow. It's because of host housing and our supporters that we are able to provide. We're going to give him an Airbnb for 2 weeks while he quarantines. We'll get him vaccinated. But they can come with no support. And unfortunately, there have been stories, and we've helped people who have ended up in homeless shelters, these families, because they need to get out and they need somewhere to go. So you don't want them living in a garage, and that's why we have our program the way it is, and we can help people get out on an emergency basis.
Well, the sitcom, of course, needs its own bits of drama. So Al comes to stay with Riley, who's back staying with his cantankerous father because Riley has recently split from his wife. They are headed for divorce. And so you've got a lot of kind of the ingredients here of an American sitcom. And I know, Chris, you've had a little bit of criticism about how this show characterizes what we know about the SIV process. You've said that most people won't understand how daunting and complicated it is. What did you make of what you saw on the show, and what do you want people to understand about it in reality?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, so I think from my perspective, anything that draws attention to this issue is incredibly important. And, you know, while it's been a number of years since I sat down and watched a sitcom, and the laugh tracks were a little jarring to me at some of the points, you know, going into our potential withdrawal from Afghanistan on May 1st, it's really important that America really does focus heavily on this issue. And so I'm very grateful that CBS was able to do something along those lines. That being said, you'll go through two episodes that I have of this show, and the SIV program itself isn't mentioned once. You know, one would assume if one knew nothing about the program that it was on an individual service member to get their interpreter out of Iraq and Afghanistan, which is you know, certainly we do have champions that do that, but there is a whole apparatus within the government that is designed to get these folks out quickly and safely. And so as appreciative I am of the whole, you know, topic, I would really like a little more education on this issue so it doesn't seem so farcical in some point.
And Chris, if the producers of the show were to say, okay, we take the criticism, but look, we've got 22 minutes and half an hour to tell a story and make it interesting and make it funny and keep an audience and build an audience. And if we get too far down into the weeds of a process like that, we've lost 22 minutes. We've lost our chance to tell a story. Do you buy that, or do you think they could have done it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair criticism, but I also think it takes less than a minute for Al, for example. I'm not a writer, but for Al to say, like, yeah, man, it was really hard to get my visa through the embassy and then through the federal government, and then I had to go through health checks. Like, that could be a whole bit. I'm not a comedic writer, but I could imagine that there's a comedic way to explain the process because it is daunting, and people need to know about it if we're going to solve this issue.
Yeah, Ellen, do you agree? I mean, I think this is a show that is, you know, we'll talk about more about this in a moment, where I think the show is aiming to make sure it is not making Al the butt of the joke. In fact, Al is very much a respected character by all of the other characters in the show, which I think is cool and important. But the show does aim to sort of riff on what his life was like in Afghanistan versus what he is learning about life in the Ohio suburbs. So do you think there was an opening for them to weave in a little bit more about the process here?
You know, the very first scene at the airport, all I could think about is how these guys arrive exhausted. And Al was very upbeat and kind of hyper and talks about how he got delayed and missed his connecting flight, and it took 20 hours longer than normal, and we've certainly heard these stories. And all I kept thinking is, why is he not more tired? I mean, we greet these people and they're exhausted. So, I mean, that was sort of like my first thing, like don't make light of the trip. And not to be picky, and again, I'm not a writer either, but the other thing, as Riley's dad is serving food, all I kept thinking was, is it halal? It's one of the questions that's always asked. So, I, like Chris said, this is the first time anyone has tried to address the situation, the SIV issue. But I agree with Chris that I don't think people have a fair representation on what an SIV is or what it takes to get here. And the cuteness factor is a little tough to deal with when you're dealing with life and death situations all the time on trying to get these guys here.
Yeah. So I will say, and I want to talk to Jamil and Samim about this. I mean, I certainly think the show aims to present a respectful and, frankly, loving and supportive relationship between Al and Riley, Riley's family's appreciation for Al, who saved Riley's life in Afghanistan multiple times. I think that is helpful. I mean, this is it's a portrayal of a real relationship, of real affection that has grown among Al and Riley and then Riley's family. So I think that's cool. And Jamil, when you think about how the American entertainment industry, and frankly how much of the Western entertainment industry portrays Muslims, I was going to say Afghans, but really just Muslims in general, people from that part of the world. What are the stereotypes? What are the things that you have seen in the past, Jamil, or maybe the things that you think that Americans are typically exposed to when it comes to how this is shown on TV or in movies?
You are talking about how they represent Muslim in United States, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm happy to be in this country. Thank God that I came here safe. Also, I appreciate all these veterans that they helped me, plus keep our promise. Alan was the one that I contacted with her, and she is the one. She made the flight for me, so emergency flight. So somehow they made it the flight for me, so I got out of Afghanistan. So when I came here, actually, I come from different culture, from a Muslim country. I mean, it's totally different for me and for my family, and also for my kids. So we are adjusting our lives here. We are treating very good till now. We don't have any problem. My kids are going to the school. So I'm so happy to be here. Same thing, my family, they are happy to be here. And so far, I am so happy to be in this country and be part of this country.
Well, I want to talk about Jamil's story here. And I have a note from Gabriel Pirlog, if I can read this. And Ellen, I think I've got permission to read this. Can I share the note from Gabriel?
Yes, Gabriel said it could be shared. There's one spelling mistake word in there, but I think you'll catch it.
Okay. and do you want to tell us who Gabriel is, Ellen, before I read this?
Jamil, you want to explain your friendship with Gabriel?
Gabriel is, he was second lead of security for DynCorp International. So he was working for DynCorp. He was from Romania. He was a Romanian guy. I used to work with him. He is the one that he wrote this story when I came to the United States. He was the one that wrote this story about me.
So here's what Gabriel writes. Quote, I met Jamil in March 2006 in full war in Kunduz, Afghanistan, a young translator born and raised in the harshest conditions. No matter how hard it was, Jamil always had a smile for everyone. Jamil never whined about anything, didn't ask for anything, didn't refuse any request, and worked with an enthusiasm that you rarely see. Meanwhile, Jamil entered active duty and carried the gun in his hand for more than 8 years. Police officer in Afghanistan is not the same thing as being a policeman anywhere else in the world. Years passed, we kept in touch, and he called me from New York City, so happy for the Haidari family, and I bow before the American governors who really leave nobody behind. Things have changed in Afghanistan, and it's possible that the Taliban will take power back, and surely Jamil and others like him who fought for freedom to literally disappear with their families from the face of the earth. But Americans leave no one behind, and Jamil, his wife, and 3 children now begin a new life in complete safety in the free world. Just be happy and be safe, my dear brother in arms, and God bless America. That's from Gabriel Pierlog. That's a beautiful note. And Ellen, to me, that's a real relationship. I mean, you hear notes like that. I'm sure you see that all the time in your organization and what you experience, Ellen.
The notes and the letters from our veterans about these guys is what makes me want to do this work. You see how much their service means. And the fact is, as we're pulling out, they will be left to die. The Taliban will show no mercy to those who worked for the U.S. Or any foreign forces, because, you know, it's NATO that's there, as well as the U.S. And again, I read these letters from soldiers and from others that have worked with these guys, and that's what makes me do this work.
Jamil, have you had a chance to see the show called The United States of Al?
Yes, sir. I watched it last night. It was very good. So it's it's funny, but it's good to watch it. Yes, it was good.
How much did you see yourself in the character of Al?
Same thing. Same thing. No difference. When I was working in Helmand Province, southern Afghanistan, the same situation Al was facing. The same situation. I was working with my U.S. My U.S. Marines brother. Same thing. Actually, the same exact thing. No difference.
Mm. And in the show, Jamil, Al is very happy to be in the United States, just as you are. Al is a very cheerful, generally a pretty happy character, and he is seen as a very wise character. He's helping other people solve some of their problems in the United States now. Did you think it was a fair? Did you think it was a fair way to show what someone like Al has gone through? Do you like the character that you saw?
Yes, I like actually whatever that Al is doing. Actually, it's pretty much we face the same problem. Mm-hmm. Actually, the things are he's doing on the show. So he's good.
Well, it sounds to me, Ellen Smith, like Jamil and Al do have a similarity in that you're right. In the show, Al comes off the plane. He's not tired. He's all fired up. He's cheerful. And everything I read from Gabriel's note and about Jamil is that he is a pretty cheerful, upbeat guy, too. You know, maybe some similarities. What did you think of the character of Al, Ellen?
You know, the thing I always say about the interpreters is they have a lot of insight to people and their emotions. And I have seen this with other SIVs right here in Rochester, where they're very good at trying to smooth things out and make things right and calm things down. So I kind of agree that we have a couple of interpreters where I can say that they and Al are kind of spot on. Again, like everything's being done in a very short, as you said, 22, you've got 22 minutes mm-hmm. to present a story, right? And things are always a little more complicated. But I don't disagree that there are parts of Al that are very, very real for these stories.
Mm-hmm. Jamil, you arrived in the United States in just December. Is that correct?
Yes, December 22nd. Yes, I arrived in 23rd. I arrived in the United States.
December 23rd.
Yes.
How have you been feeling these last several months? I mean, you go from a very different life in Afghanistan to what you are dealing with now. How are you feeling, and what has been the biggest change for you, Jamil?
That's all I'm feeling. My feeling is I missed all those explosion, all those firefight every night, all those hiding myself to, you know, that thinking the Taliban gonna come and kill me tonight or next day or next hour or next minute. Same thing with ISIS, same thing with kidnappers, and I would keep hiding myself from them and my family. And I did not talk that I applied for SIV by the time I got here in the United States. So, yes.
Wow.
That's all experience I have it from Afghanistan, bad experience.
Jamil, do you, this may be a strange question, but I mean, when you describe constantly hearing whether it's explosions or wondering if today is the day the Taliban arrives for you, when you compare that to now, was it something you had to get used to fall asleep at night and not be scared, not be worried about a noise outside, not be worried about who might show up? Did that take some getting used to?
Bro, be honest with you, I'm sleeping very good here. I'm not hearing those explosions anymore, those firefights anymore. Even we had shrapnel used to hit my house. Ugh. Even my wife got hit two times by shrapnel, by bullets, but the bullet was already cold. It came from far away. So I hit my wife two times, be honest. Two times hit my wife and didn't penetrate to her, and thanks God she's okay.
My goodness. Well, we're so happy you're here. Let me ask Chris Purdy, who's a program manager for Veterans for American Ideals. Can you describe some of your own service? And in doing so, Chris, I mean, really at the core of the conversation this hour is how we are learning about these kinds of stories, and sometimes comedy. Sometimes it's American media. Sometimes it's sitcoms. Sometimes it's something else. In this case, CBS has a new show called The United States of Al. It's not perfect, but it's a chance for people to see a little bit more about these relationships. Can you describe some of your own service and the relationships perhaps that you built?
Sure, yeah. So I was in the Army National Guard from 2004 to 2012. I have analogous experience in the sense that I did serve in Iraq at the end of our mission there in 2011. And so I witnessed a lot of the mistakes that we made, I think, in that withdrawal and the consequences of that afterwards on the interpreters were significant. And so I think my perspective is basically to say we made this mistake once before, and we can't do it again. We absolutely need to protect our interpreters, the 17,000 of them that are still remaining in Afghanistan. I, as far as telling the story through humor, like I'm all about how we tell the story, and that is fantastic. You know, the military is full of humorous situations, that I think we can draw upon. It is a real challenge though, because as we just heard, this is still a very real, threat to the people who served alongside American soldiers and who saved American soldiers' lives. And we need to do everything that we can to bring them out and bring them home. This program saves lives, and it's invaluable. And I just don't know how. I know we're really trying to look for the humor in this, but it is a real challenge for me to see the humor. And so I don't know.
Well, I take that point, and I think we can all, sort of have different viewpoints, and it would be a boring world if everyone agreed. I think the show has its strengths and weaknesses myself, from what I have seen. And as I understand it, Ellen Smith, as the show goes on, we're going to see more of Al's family, sometimes through FaceTime, as he talks to them about their situation. So, Ellen, when we are meeting people like Jamil, when we meet people like Samim, listeners are probably wondering, do they come alone? Do they come with family? Do they come first and then family comes later? What is the typical situation, Ellen?
So, and this is what I find upsetting about the show, is they talk about Al and both Riley and Al talk about getting his family here one day. Well, right now, for an unmarried SIV, an unmarried interpreter, there's no process to get their family here to safety, the brothers, the sisters, the parents. And and that's something that really struck me as disingenuous. I hope they get into it. Maybe they're trying to form this belief that Riley and Al think that the family is going to get here. But, you know, our interpreters cannot bring their family here under the current program. They have to wait. They've got to go through the regular immigration process, and I just don't see it happening unless we change our policy. And I don't see it changing anytime soon. And what that does for our families is it leaves them kind of in a constant state of PTSD and stress, because anytime something happens in Kabul or Kunduz or Kandahar, everybody's on their, you know, Facebook checking in to make sure their family is okay. So, you know, it's a continuing stressful situation. And then we have other issues where there might be children who are 20 or 21, and then they're not allowed to come with their family, and they're expected to stay in Afghanistan, and it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I think about the way, as Reza Aslan, executive producer of the United States of Al, has described it, when I think about representation of Muslims in American media, especially entertainment media, Ellen, I think of shows like 24, the Fox drama, in which there were often, not always, but often, Muslim terrorists who were at the heart of these plots, and Kiefer Sutherland was this hero who was racing to find the quote-unquote bad guys. And I think that some of what Aslan is trying to say here is that, you know, we're not going to get everything right about this particular show, but we are going to have a character that we're proud of. We're going to have a character that is more realistic and true to life. And we're not going to fall into these stereotypes that we've so often seen in American media. What have you seen in the portrayal of, whether it's Afghans, whether it's people from that part of the world, whether it's Muslims, Ellen, in American media that, you know, either troubles you or becomes sort of a consistent trope that you've seen over the years?
It's what worries me is anytime anything happens, you know, you hear of a mass shooting or something. I mean, I've had people tell me, well, I looked immediately to see if it was a terrorist, if it was a Muslim, you know, and I'm like, geez, you know, I mean, the majority of horrible things that are happening on a mass scale are not due to a Muslim. And what I find upsetting in my work is sometimes I talk to people and one of their questions is, well, how do you know to trust them, you know, them? And I just find it just mind-boggling. So I mean, I agree that I'm glad that this show is trying to put a more positive spin on this. And especially, you know, there's not a lot of Americans outside of cities who have met Muslims. And so I hopefully that this show is an introduction, a positive introduction.
Yep. We're going to get Samim's story in just a second. Before we do that, a couple of things. I want to take a phone call from Connor, first up in Rochester. Go ahead, Connor.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for bringing, you cover the SIV program pretty regularly, and I really appreciate that. My husband and I have had the opportunity to house three of the SIVs who have come to Rochester through Ellen's program, and I just want to say how much they have added to our life. I haven't watched the program, the television show. I'm going to try and catch it now that I know about it. But there's so much joy in expanding your, opening your home to someone who's coming in. And I cannot tell you how much they have added to our life. I do want to just share some of the greatness of one of the guys who stayed with us. My son, my biological son, was in a car accident, and my SIV son stayed up with me all night because he just became a part of the family. And it's just wonderful for me to learn from him and what he adds to our life, and also how very, very hard it is. I'm not going to take a lot of your time, but very, very hard it is to worry constantly about his family and trying to figure out how we can get them to safety, because the threats are not just to the individuals, they're to the whole family. Mm. And so I Ellen can cover all of it. But I just wanted to share, if anybody's interested in helping Ellen, taking people into your home is one of the most wonderful things for yourself. We have gained so much from that. So,
Connor, can I ask a quick question? Do you plan to watch the CBS sitcom, and how do you feel about CBS doing a sitcom on the subject?
Well, I didn't know about it until your show just now, so I will give it a try. I'm going to ask each of the three guys who stayed with us what they think about it. You know, I think it's a good thing to try. I think anything we can do to show humanity of another person, especially people who are not familiar, you know, I had no connection to any of this prior to Ellen saying she needed a place for somebody to stay. So it was all new to me. And I think if we can see humanity in other people, that's all to the good. And making it a comedy may make it more accessible. I don't know. I haven't seen the show. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I'm grateful for your phone call and certainly for the work you're doing in our community. Thank you for this call and for what you're doing, Connor. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's not work. Ellen has work. We just have space.
Well,
yeah, but it's fun.
Thank you.
It's great.
For listeners who want to take a cue from the caller, Ellen, what would you? I'm going to ask you and Chris both what you would urge people to do if they want to help people like Jamil, people like the fictional Al on the CBS show. Ellen, I'll start with you. What would you urge there?
So there's a couple things I urge, and that is write to your senators and representative in Congress. To make sure that these families are not left behind. As Chris mentioned, there's 17,000 visas in process right now. I think we need a change in the program. They need 2 years of experience with the U.S., but tours are, I don't know, Chris can tell you, 8 or 9 months. So we've got guys who are just literally weeks short of 2 years and can't get to the U.S. And it's just horrifying to me to think that under the current system they're going to be left behind. The other thing that people can do is, once COVID is under control, we can always use host homes. That's how I met Connor and David. They agreed to offer a place to stay to one of our guys, and now they've gone through three of our guys for places to stay. And then we have an event coming up June 14th through 20th called Run for Their Lives. And it's a virtual race that goes on for 1 week to raise money so we can pay for their rent, their security deposit, and their food when they arrive.
Awesome stuff. You know, Connor said that Connections covers SIVs with some regularity. The reason is Ellen doesn't let us not. I mean, Ellen is just relentless, as everyone on this call knows. And honestly, when Ellen gets in touch with us, and the stories are so compelling and they're so important, they just add such important human faces to what's too often are numbers or descriptions without actually knowing the human cost of war and of the opportunity in our community to help. So we're always happy to do it. Chris, what would you urge people to do if they're hearing this phone call thinking, wow, I mean, I'd love to help someone in some way?
Yeah, I mean, and I want to echo the fact that Ellen is a force of nature.
She is a force of nature.
You know, we're a national organization. I myself personally am a Rochester native, Aquinas grad, and so I'm so proud whenever I'm on calls with multiple coalition partners to hear Ellen's voice and to know that in, like, across the entire country, people know who she is. They know who Rochester is. They know what the people of this community does. And so supporting the work that Ellen does is essential. Donating and supporting other groups like the International Refugee Assistance Project that provides legal assistance to these folks as they navigate the Byzantine process that is the SIV program. You know, those are things that you could directly do and will have a real impact. The other thing I'll say is to echo Ellen's point about contacting members of Congress. Congressman Morelli has been a huge advocate on this issue, and his office has been a wonderful support. And so taking the time to thank him and then asking, well, what's the next policy step? What's the next thing that we can do to bring all these people home before it's too late? And what we're advocating for is to bring all of them to the United States en masse and process them like we have done historically, like we did after Vietnam, after Iraq in 90, the operation was in 96, but after the first Gulf War, and for less than the cost of Monroe County's annual budget, and for, you know, also along those lines, less than the cost of Kodak's annual revenue, we could bring all 17,000 of those Afghans and their family members to the United States and get them out of danger immediately. And so that's what we're asking Congress to start thinking about doing as we approach this May 1st deadline. And so if your listeners are out there and saying, what's a direct ask I could give to our senators and members of Congress, I would say that's what it is.
All right. I want to bring in Samim Rahimi, who is a former Kabul embassy worker. And Samim, it's nice to have you. Have you had a chance to see the new CBS show, The United States of Al?
Thank you so much. Not yet, because I'm so busy. I have 3 jobs, and when I come back home, I am so tired and just sleep. And I saw the emails, and I know some information about that.
Well, I'm glad to have you with us. Can you tell us your story about your own journey, you know, from Afghanistan to the United States?
Yeah. About 8 years ago, I joined to U.S. Embassy as a security guard. And so after passed the investigation interview every 2 years and polygraph test, I got my special immigration visa. It takes like maybe 3.5 years to complete all process. And then I come to Rochester for first time. That I was in Afghanistan, I think it's so hard because we don't have any family here. We don't have any friend in Rochester. It is so hard. I think it is so hard to me. But when I arrived here, Ellen Smith and keeping our promise. And let me tell you about we arrived to airport. When I arrived to airport with my kids and my wife, I have too many worries about life, about home, about everything. And just thanking to see the Ellen keeping our promise and the volunteers. There is too much people, like maybe 20 or 25 people coming to welcome. And that time I was so happy. I'm really crying that time. And so now I have a lot of friends here. And it's so good. It's so good. I don't have any problems. I'm like Jamil, and we are so happy.
I'm thrilled to hear that you felt so welcome when you arrived. What is day-to-day life like now for you, Samim? You said that you have 3 jobs you're working?
Yeah, I have 3 jobs. When I came here, after 1 week, lockdown started to all United States, and I have to work. At that time, I think to how can I help to people? Just there is one organization, they call it Rochester Refugee Sewing and Repair, and I start work to that guy and making just masks for community. That time, people can find masks in the stores. And every day we make like 1,000 masks and sell for people. And now I start work with another company also with Rochester Refugee also. And I start my own business, own a small business also. We are so happy here.
Oh, boy. Ellen, anything you want to add to Samim's story?
I do. So Samim arrived the end of January, and I think he probably just got his green card and Social Security card right when the lockdown hit and COVID just hit this area with vengeance. And I received a phone call from Rochester Refugee Services at 10 o'clock at night asking if I knew anyone who knew how to sew. And interestingly, Samim was a tailor before he was a guard. He was a tailor in Afghanistan. And he showed me these photographs of these beautiful draperies that are just, they're exquisite. And he said, I would really like to get back into sewing. And I was just, I kind of rolled my eyes and thought, oh gosh, well, I don't know how we're going to do that. I posted some of his pictures online of what he made. But we received this phone call at 10 o'clock at night. He was at Rochester Refugee Resettlement Services. They had gotten a United Way grant to make these masks on an emergency basis because, like you said, nobody could get masks anywhere. And he was to work the next morning at 9 a.m. I called him at like 10:15 at night. I said, report here if you want to do this work. He said, absolutely. And he started working right away. Like he said, 1,000 masks a day. He was ripping these things out. And he made masks for us as well. And he made sure that every volunteer had a mask and all the children had masks as well.
Wow. What a story. Already using his talents here. Samim, what is your hope for the future here in Rochester?
Sometime I am thinking about my friends. They are working at embassy and all contract section of with the U.S. Army or another thing. The asylum programs takes too much time, like maybe 3 years. When we apply, we have to wait like 3 years, sometimes like 4 years. I have one friend. He stayed like 8 years waiting for their visa. And really, his life is so problem in Afghanistan because everyone know about their work. They work with the U.S. military. You know, in Afghanistan, not all people of Afghanistan, just maybe 25% of people don't like foreign people in Afghanistan, like army. And when they are catch that Afghan people will work with foreign people, they don't ask anything, just kill that guy. Same like Jamil said, they don't ask anything. Yeah. But we need everything in Afghanistan. Also, we have to buy food, we have to buy clothes, we have to pay rent for home, for everything. And they have to, we have to make money. And just they don't think about that, just why you work with another foreign people in Afghanistan. It is so bad for my friends and my brothers. And so another thing, we have lot of Afghans that will work with U.S. Army or U.S. military contractor. They are fired from duty. They are fired from work. And U.S. Embassy didn't approve their case. Their life is so dangerous. They have too many problems. I have a lot of my friends them like that. And in the future, just I want to help with that guy. I want to tell everyone, every organization to find some way to bring that guy to United States.
Jamil Haidari, can I ask you, what is your hope for your future in Rochester?
I hope to find a job soon. I hope to be certified in Rochester, some sort of training. First, I need to get and find a job here to survive with my family.
Well, we've been hearing Jamil and Samim's stories as SIVs, special immigrant visas, which is essentially the story that you might not hear that acronym, SIV, if you watch the new CBS show, The United States of Al, but it is about an Afghan interpreter who reunites in an Ohio suburb after waiting 3 years to get a visa, and he comes to live with the American Marine that he got to know in Afghanistan. That's a CBS show. It's comedy, but there is a lot of truth at the core there, and that's what we've been talking about. And let me read a couple of notes from listeners. Charles says, hopefully the United States of Al, hopefully the guys will link up, his email's a little clumsy. He's writing about the SEAL team guys. He says, hopefully they will make sure they get the veteran portrayals accurate as well. Enlisted alum Parker Young's involvement gives me hope as they were able to work out the kinks, but too many vet-themed projects end up more Hurt Locker and less Range 15. Chris, how do you feel about the veteran portrayal in American media and so far what you've seen in this particular show?
Yeah, I think oftentimes we really want to focus on the media about the negatives in the veteran life when one comes back. It is difficult. Don't get me wrong. It is hard to come back and readjust. But you know, the veteran community is so much more than I think. It's so much more than a portrayal of someone who's down on their luck and living in their parents' basement. I mean, you know, we are community members. We are active participants in government, in business, in so many things. This program, the SIV program itself, is a direct result of veterans stepping up and getting involved. And so I understand, to your point about the 22 minutes, you need to get things in as much as possible. But I just hope that the media would get away from this trope of the broken veteran and look at the larger picture of veterans being engaged in civic life here in the United States.
Ellen, I'd like if you could address a question from a listener named Michael, who says, here is something that I don't understand about this. How can people who come from a country with no history of democracy, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, equal rights for women and gay rights contribute to our country? There isn't one single majority Muslim country that has what I listed above. Is that just a coincidence? That's from Michael. Ellen?
Well, what Michael is forgetting is that these guys have worked with the U.S. and welcomed the U.S. into Afghanistan because they wanted these freedoms. They want their wives to be able to go shopping. They want their daughters to be able to go to school. They don't want their children only to be educated with someone's certain belief of the Quran. They want freedom. And I just find it horrifying that somehow they think that our SIV friends cannot be great Americans, which they are, because they're coming from that. America is their beacon. It is what they want for their country. They wanted more freedom. They can't even listen to music under the Taliban. Give me a break. You know, it's not going to happen. We're pulling out. And so the question is, do you leave them behind because we came in and they fought with us shoulder to shoulder and side by side? And there's nothing I love more than to see, I see the wives who have not been allowed to leave their home under the Taliban. They're learning to ride bikes. They're riding their bikes to Price Right. You know, they're going to English classes. They're traveling together on the buses. They have a lot to offer. I have made such wonderful friends in this program, and I love these families dearly, and we have all learned from each other.
Yeah, I would just say, look, Michael, there are oppressive regimes in places around the world, and if your feeling is people who are growing up in oppressive regimes therefore shouldn't be welcome in places where there is more pluralism, more freedom, because they may not have those values, you have just limited, you put walls up all around the world just because people have been oppressed. And thankfully, Ellen's group does the opposite.
That's, can I just respond to that also?
Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Sure. I mean, so, you know, the thing that I have when we talk about this, you know, people ask about security checks and everything like that. There's no security check that matters to me more than having these people in my gun truck with a gun. I trust them with my life. And I know people whose lives were literally saved by them, American soldiers who would, there would be Gold Star mothers here in Rochester if it weren't for the sacrifices of our interpreters in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, it is difficult for anyone to integrate into a new society. I would challenge any American to live in any other country for a significant amount of time and come away with that unchanged. But, you know, when we work together on this, our community is stronger. It's more resilient. And the fact of the matter is that we need these people in our lives. We're better off for it.
Just over a minute. Bob in Rochester has a question. Ellen, Bob wants to know, how does the treatment of PTSD happen if needed? Does the organization take care of that? Do the host families work out issues with PTSD or the SIVs themselves?
It's something that we're addressing with SIVs, and we encourage them to talk to the Refugee Health Center doctors if they're experiencing problems. But the SIV community here, even though they came not knowing anyone, they welcome each other into the community. And so there's a lot of support for each other. But they get treated for the Refugee Health Center. And we talk to them about some of the problems. Jamil can attest to the fact that when he arrived, I talked to him about some of the problems that they may have and to recognize these issues. So it's something that we try to address.
And I wish we weren't out of time, but as we run out of time, one more time, Ellen and Chris, to let people know where to find you and your organizations online to learn more. Ellen, go ahead.
They can go to keepingourpromise.org, and we have a virtual community run June 14th through 20th called Run for Their Lives.
And you can learn a lot more there and plan to be involved. If you like, Chris, Veterans for American Ideals, where online?
Yeah, VFAI.org, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
So. VFAI.org. Thank you. Chris, thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Ellen Smith, always an honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Evan.
Jamil Haidari, officially from Connections. Welcome. Thanks for being in Rochester. Thanks for the work you do, and thanks for sharing your story, Jamil.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on your show today. At the end, I personally appreciate United States government. At least they give their local allies sanctuaries in the United States. But also I want from this government to bring all of these guys that they work beside their soldier in Afghanistan.
Bring them here. I'm with you, Jamil. We're going to run out of time. Thank you, Samim.